This is CICK News. Today and Yesterday in Smithers is a conference that brings together some of the most technical and informative conversations happening in the Skeena region. It's curated by the Smithers Exploration Group, and it's called Rock Talk, taking place from February 17th till today, February 19th. Rock Talk 2026 dives into British Columbia's most active exploration regions, the Northwest and North Central. This year's conference features a lineup of speakers covering epithermal and porphyry deposits, regional updates, and project highlights from across northern BC. I was there yesterday morning for a handful of presentations and interviews. Based on the Rock Talk 2026 presentations, the main areas of interest for mineral exploration highlighted in the conference program are district-scale and regionally significant exploration targets, including areas such as the Golden Triangle, which is a 500-kilometer mineral-rich, naturally stunning area stretching from Kitimat up to Atlin near the Yukon border. Sessions also cover the latest updates on regional permitting, land use planning, geological exploration training initiatives, and industry structures such as those from the Association for Mineral Exploration, and regulatory updates. The voices that you'll hear today from the presentations begins with remarks from Ted Vanderwart, president of the Smithers Exploration Group, who welcomed attendees on behalf of the organization's board, as well as Mabel Forsyth, who represents the Wet'suwet'en Nation, followed with a territorial acknowledgement, which welcomed participants to Wet'suwet'en Yinta. The morning's political perspective came from Ellis Ross, MLA for Skeena, who emphasized the role of the private sector in strengthening Canada's economy and unlocking the Northwest's potential for mining, LNG, forestry, and port development. Smithers Mayor Gladys Attrill highlighted the municipality's support for responsible development and the importance of the Northwest Regional Benefit Alliance. The industry overview concluded with a regional exploration update from the British Columbia Geological Survey, noting record mineral exploration expenditures across BC, with significant activity concentrated in the Northwest. The following is a short collection of some of the speakers from yesterday, and next week, CICK News will air a full overview of the conference with interviews.
Welcome to our 37th annual Smithers Exploration Group Rock Talk. My name, for those who don't know me, is Ted Vanderwart, current president for Smithers Exploration Group. On behalf of our board and organization, we welcome everyone here who's made the trip and time to join us.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Mabel Forsyth, and my chief name is Timberwolf. I'm from the Gidimdan clan. This town sits on Gidimdan traditional territory, so I would like to welcome you to Gidimdan traditional territory.
My name is Ted Vanderwart, president of Smithers Exploration Group.
How are you feeling about the turnout, the presentations, and what's planned for these next 2 days?
Well, we have one of our highest turnouts this year, 97 delegates, so that's good news. We've seen a lot of exploration projects this year, so there's a lot of interest from outside. The talks are always very well received.
Nate's first talk showed there's an upward trend in mineral deposits. Does that reflect there's so many people here, or is it just that Rock Talks is growing?
The Golden Triangle, which is a very well-known, at least in our business, of a very mineral-rich area of the province. So it's always attracted a lot of the explorers and mines in proposal and operating mines.
So what does Smithers Exploration Group do?
A Smithers Exploration Group is an advocacy group for the minerals industry in British Columbia. We do a lot of social component just for people in the industry. We have an outreach component for the public in general. That can include schools, it could be job fairs, showing opportunities within this industry and mining industry.
We're in the hole, I gotta be honest. One of the reasons why I come to events like this is to see if Canada can get out of this hole. And it's not really the government that can get us out of this hole. It's the private sector. It's always been the private sector. So what you're talking about, and many conferences that talk about forestry, talk about energy, are really talking about rebuilding Canada. Because the bad spot we're in is not just this stalled economy we're in. We're behind. We're behind in terms of supply chains, domestically, internationally. We're behind in technology. We're behind in AI. Not to mention the relationship we have with one of our biggest trading partners south of the border. It's going to take a long time to dig out of this hole. But if we can separate the ideology and the politics away from putting shovels in the ground, we can help to rebuild this country. And Skeena-Buckley Valley, with the opportunities, port development, mining, forestry, LNG, we've got billions, if not hundreds of billions, to offer Canada in terms of getting to a better place. So looking forward to this discussion this morning, and thank you very much for inviting me. Thanks.
The entire country is becoming more aware of the region and the potential and what that can mean for Canada. We are in very interesting and exciting times for your industry and for our region. At the Town of Smithers, we look forward to working with you. And later this year, the Town of Smithers will host the Minerals North Conference, and we look forward to seeing many of you here again. Minerals North is one of the largest northern mining conferences in Western Canada. I also want to note that as a member community of the Northwest Resource Benefit Alliance, we seek your support for the RBA. Most of you know about it, I think, but the RBA is an agreement between the province of BC and the 21 local governments between Vanderhoof and Haida Gwaii, and it provides $250 million over 5 years for community infrastructure. The RBA provides financial resources to our communities to maintain and build the infrastructure that residents and businesses and industry need, so that communities like Smithers can be ready to provide the services that you need as you develop your projects. When you look to us and our neighboring communities for sites to build upon and for healthy communities for your employees to live in, we need to be able to develop our communities appropriately.
That high gold price definitely helped us out here in the Northwest. And there's a shot from the Argillite vein from Dome Mountain underground. All right, so if we go now away from mining and kind of dive into the actual numbers for mineral exploration itself, which is where most of you guys are involved, we see over the past 20 years, this year is actually a record high at $750 million, which is a large increase of about almost $200 million from 2024. So I guess that people were able to raise financings last year and start to do some more exploration. So I've heard already that there's a lot of plans for this year, so who knows, maybe we could be going to a record high. And as I mentioned before, that was a large number of projects in Northwest, but also in the province. So it's not just inflation. It is that the fact that actually we had record number of companies get back to our expenditure survey, which was good. And so of the money being spent, it's documented that about 60 to 70% of that occurs in drilling costs. And so that's another big metric that we like to track over time.
I'm Nick Corcoran. I'm the regional geologist for Northwestern BC. I work for the BC Geological Survey, which is a part of the BC government.
What's your part of organizing or orchestrating Rock Talks this year?
So basically, as the regional geologist, I am aware of most of the projects in the Northwest, so I kind of curate the speaker list and organize the speakers to come to present on the geology of Northwestern and North Central BC.
When you're choosing the speakers, do you try to have a theme or sort of use the year prior to understand what people would be most interested in hearing from speakers?
A little bit. It really depends on the discoveries of the time and then the financings of who's working. Some people are working too much, so they're too busy to come. Mm. But then basically, I just try to do a variety of different deposits so the geology remains interesting and kind of try to scale different parts of Northwestern BC. Mm-hmm. And then any companies that have had any major discovery in the last year or two.
You mentioned two things in your presentation that I just kind of wanted to, I guess, clarify. One was that a lot of the charts are showing an upward trend, that it seems to be lots of gold. And then another one was about a $9.6 billion deficit. Can you kind of expand on both of those things?
Well, the government budget thing is, yeah, it's a $9.6 billion deficit, which was less than it was expected. But you'll have to refer to the BC government's releases on that. Yeah, but due to the high prices in gold and silver and copper as well, it has kind of had an upward effect on mineral exploration in the past year or so. And it seems that it's allowed junior companies to major companies to raise quite a large amount of capital and gain financings, which then allows for more exploration programs and bigger programs, which equates to more spending and more expenditures and more people working in northern BC.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Cheers.
Concerns are being raised about the long-term safety and construction quality of a seniors housing complex in Telkwa called Aldermere House, with board members of the Telkwa Senior Housing Society warning that serious design and planning failures could worsen over time if they're not addressed. BC Housing responded to my request to speak on this piece after it aired on February 5th. The following is a truncated version of that broadcast for context, along with BC Housing's seniors housing advisor, Kate Will's response that I received this week on Monday. The Telkwa Seniors Housing Society board members' voices you'll hear are those of the president, John McDevitt, and vice president, Derek Meerdink.
Okay, what we see at Alder House is a project that was undertook or spearheaded by BC Housing. And just the whole way this whole procedure was done, it's just so many red flags that have arisen along the way in that. The problem being is, how did these buildings ever pass? We look at design, we look at how did this ever happen like this? It just boggles me from the whole planning perspective how these important things were missed.
One thing, when they put the sidewalks on top of the sewer lines and on top of the water line, what happens when you have to dig them up? You got to dig everything, the sidewalks, everything up. Somebody screwed up big time.
This all starts with planning. When you haven't got a plan, you're planning to fail. So to me, when we look at this, there was no overall plan of how this was ever going to move forward. When these designs come in, the village should be looking at this and determining where their lines are going to go, having a definite plan for the water, elevations for sewer, the grades. It seems like all that was missed. The contractors come in with their own engineers, their own expertise, and somehow this got through, bypassed the village. And yeah, and they just went about their business in a conduct that absolutely makes no sense from the whole planning perspective, right to the design of these buildings. But at the end of the day, we're left with a product that should not have been in Telkwa. These things belong out in a desert somewhere, not in wet ground in Telkwa. Mm. Yeah, the problems we're having with these, with these basements, they're not on concrete. They're basically steel girder trusses. They sit on wood. They're not a permanent structure that's going to live through the test of time for the next 35 years. And yeah, we're experiencing huge problems with these. And it's just a matter of time before this completely fails and it becomes a serious issue. The battle right now is we've made our concerns known to Terra Housing, who liaisons between us and BC Housing. And that's where we stand. We'd like somebody from BC Housing to come up and have a look at these buildings and show them what's actually wrong with these buildings. And we also wonder why there was no bond or performance bond ever put in place by the contractor that did this. How did this slip through the cracks? That money's all gone. So there's nothing there to do any repairs to these buildings. Normally, when a company comes in, yeah, they have a performance bond. If there's a deficiency, that those funds are there to address that and fix these.
Derek, we're standing out here now and Hubert Place is going to be built pretty close. Tell me about what the plan is, how you plan on doing some of the repairs here.
Okay, what we'd like to do is get the new buildings built, and then at that point move the residences over that are in Alder House into Hubert House, and then proceed with the repairs on Alder House. Our plan is to get these buildings jacked up, get a proper concrete foundation underneath these with a concrete floor to provide a vapor barrier and radon provision, as well as allow for the drainage. Right now, all the water is coming into these buildings and compromising the structural integrity of these foundations. They are caving in as we speak, and this problem will only get worse. They are on 2x6 plates, not pressure treated. They are on steel girder trusses, which doesn't allow for any frost protection, so they are constantly moving. As the water comes off the roof and melts off the road, it pushes against these foundations, and they've already bowed in a couple inches already. So this is in 2 years the damage that is done. Yeah. So you can imagine in a couple more years how much more severe this is going to be.
BC Housing says it is committed to ensuring the homes that it funds are safe, high quality, and meet provincial standards, as well as residents' needs. When construction deficiencies are identified, the agency works with the nonprofit operator and project team to assess the issues and ensure that they are addressed as quickly as possible. BC Housing also notes that construction contracts, including standardized agreements developed by the Canadian Construction Documents Committee, or CCDC, outlines warranties, bonding, and deficiency processes intended to ensure accountability and recourse if problems arise. Typically, consultants identify deficiencies and contractors are responsible for fixing them. In the case of Aldermere House, BC Housing says the project was impacted when the original contractor, Nomadic Modular Structures Incorporated, filed for bankruptcy in October of 2023, near the end of construction. With no contractor available to fulfill deficiency obligations, a new contractor was brought in to complete the work. BC Housing adds that it conducts post-completion reviews to inform future oversight and risk planning. Are you hearing from BC Housing? Like, are you, like, you've told BC Housing about the issues here? Are you in
communications? Yeah, they know all about the issues. They said they found some money. And I was told to stay out of it and let them do it.
Housing Minister Christine Boyle says Smithers is among seven new BC communities selected for phase two of the Heart and Hearth program, aimed at bringing people indoors and connecting them with supports. BC's Minister of Housing and Municipal Affairs, Christine Boyle, says Smithers is poised to join the next phase of the province's Heart and Hearth initiative, a program which is designed to help communities address encampments and support people experiencing homelessness. Speaking to me from Squamish following a provincial announcement, Minister Boyle outlined how the expansion will bring the program to seven additional communities, including Smithers. The HEART component focuses on outreach and relationship building with people who are unhoused, while the HEARTH component provides temporary indoor accommodation paired with connections to healthcare, mental health and addiction services, and longer-term housing supports. Listen into this interview with Minister Boyle, where we discuss how communities are selected, what readiness looks like in rural towns like Smithers, how local partners can be involved, and what the timeline could be for more permanent housing solutions in Smithers.
Christine Boyle, I'm the Provincial Minister of Housing and Municipal Affairs. I'm currently in Squamish. We were up in Squamish yesterday to announce the expansion, the phase two of this Heart and Hearth program, which is coming into seven communities in BC, including Smithers and Squamish, Powell River, New West, Minster, Cranbrook, and then an expansion of the current program in Campbell River and the Cheam First Nation near Chilliwack. Those seven adding to eight existing communities around the province that have had the Heart and Hearth program.
How does the province assess readiness for something like the Heart and Hearth partnership in these smaller and rural communities such as Smithers compared to larger cities?
So it really begins with a local government reaching out to request either being part of this program or requesting additional resources from the province to help support folks who are vulnerable in the community, who may be unhoused, or in communities where there are encampments that the local government wants to work with the province to address. That's been the focus of the program. So really by request, and then the province looks to, you know, a number of metrics, including the point in time homeless count and the existence of encampments and the length they've been in place, as well as the willingness of a local government to partner to find solutions together.
And what conversations did the ministry have with regional partners such as Northern Health or Selkant Friendship Center or nonprofits before moving ahead or as part of the sort of holistic picture of deciding to partner with the town of Smithers?
Between both the ministry and BC Housing, we work closely with health partners and community partners on all sorts of programs. And the Heart and Hearth program has been developed through a partnership with the local government. And I've been grateful to be able to speak with the mayor a number of times about her and the community's desire to address the encampment that had been in the community to find spaces to safely bring people inside. And that's really what this program is designed for, to be that first step where people can come in and have a safe and dignified place to rest their head, and then to connect with health supports, maybe mental health supports or addiction and recovery supports or other social supports as they are needed, to move them along a housing continuum and a recovery journey when they're ready.
Okay, I understand that we're in the announcement phase, but are you aware of what the town of Smithers plans to do in and naming some of those supports that you just mentioned?
That's the part of the conversation we're at now. So I know that the city is working with our team provincially to locate a site and then to look at how many beds could be there and what supports are needed for the folks in the community who will need this service. The emergency winter shelter, of course, gives us some sense of what the need is. But the Heart and Hearth program also includes the hearth part, is the temporary housing part. The heart part of the program includes a staff person who would be in the community working to do outreach and understand what the needs are of folks who are unhoused or living in encampments in the community, so that the service can be shaped around supporting them best.
Yeah. And I guess, what timeline does the ministry anticipate for more permanent or year-round housing? You mentioned the emergency shelter in Smithers, which is currently operating until March 31st of this year. So is there a timeline for more permanent year-round housing options in Smithers?
So we are continuing to work on the Alfred Ave permanent shelter. I don't have a timeline on the completion of that, but that work continues alongside the temporary housing that will be part of the Heart and Hearth program.
Maybe this is too localized of a question, but the most recent local homelessness count, it showed a significant increase in people experiencing homelessness in Smithers, with 84% identifying as Indigenous. So how is Heart and Hearth designed to respond to our local demographics and trends?
That's a great question, and that's why we work closely with the local government and local service providers, and why it matters so much that the temporary housing that's part of this program is paired with outreach staff on site, so that the supports can be built around what the need is in the community, which may include cultural supports, may include connections to health or social services. All of that is really designed to meet people where they're at, bring them inside to a safe and stable place, and then help build those next steps alongside them. And local staff on the ground and the local community will really know best what that looks like, and the province is there to support that, to invest in the beds and people that are needed to help move folks along.
Minister Boyle, was there anything that I didn't ask that you think is important to include in this conversation about the Heart and Hearth program coming into Smithers?
It's an important opportunity and an exciting one, I think, to support people to move indoors, to build their confidence, to build healthy routines, to give them access to the basics of meals and showers and laundry that help them move toward other long-term housing solutions and health goals. This is a really important step, and I am grateful for the support and leadership from Mayor and Council in Smithers and the community support that sees this as a solution to the challenges that we've been hearing from folks in the community. So I look forward to working alongside Smithers to roll this out and see what a difference it can make.
Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me today.
Yeah, anytime. Thanks for having me.
While the province frames Heart and Hearth as a partnership model, the town of Smithers says the work on the ground is just beginning.
In this follow-up conversation, Smithers Communication Director Samantha LeBlanc explains how the municipality formally joined the program earlier this year after years of advocating for additional supports, citing high per capita homelessness numbers and ongoing encampment pressures. The town outlines plans for a public engagement process this summer, and Samantha describes how a local working group will be formed in collaboration with BC Housing, and how the temporary Heart and Hearth response fits alongside the longer-term Alfred Avenue housing project. In this interview, Samantha also explains how the site selection will be approached and what role local service providers and Indigenous organizations may play, as well as how the town intends to ensure culturally appropriate supports in a community where the majority of people counted as homeless identify as Indigenous.
So Heart and Hearth is a program by the province supported by BC Housing. They will be the ones implementing it. It is really an encampment-focused working program to address the encampment that we have in our community and other communities around BC. It is a focus on Heart, which is the outreach team that supports people in the encampment and people experiencing unsecure housing, really that outreach part of it, as well as the hearth, which is the physical location of having somewhere for them to go. So it is kind of a full wraparound of people experiencing homelessness.
So given some local criticism that the current emergency shelters rollout lacked public engagement, does the town plan to involve formal community consultation process as part of Heart and Hearth?
Yes, absolutely. So council made it very clear that with this program, they do want to see local public engagement with the community to find solutions that fit for us.
Minister Boyle says that the program begins when a local government requests provincial partnership. So when did Smithers formally request to join Heart and Hearth, and what local data conditions used to inform that request?
Yeah, so council and staff have been advocating for years for additional support within our community. We formally joined the Heart and Hearth program just earlier this year, around the end of January. We were approached by the province, so that's started in February. And then a lot of the support is based on our community needs. As I said, we've been advocating for years. Our latest point in time homeless count, which also is people experiencing housing insecurity, per capita is quite high. I believe it was about 77 people who were experiencing housing insecurity within our community, which is very high for a population of our size.
Do you know how the working group is going to be formulated, or how you're going to do outreach so that the right voices and organizations and perspectives are represented?
Absolutely. So BC Housing has a large part in implementing that. As the municipality, we will help identify any groups within our community that may be able to assist and help with that working group. So that includes Indigenous organizations, outreach support, any of the social services we have in town, as well as municipal employees for things like, you know, site servicing, engineering, anything like that they might need. So it is kind of a full spectrum of people who will be in that working group.
But people will apply, or the town's going to sort of, and town
we will identify, and then it will go from there.
Okay.
Yeah.
As the town works with the province to identify a site and also to determine bed numbers, what criteria would be informing site selection, and then also what kind of units this would be?
Yeah, so it really depends on our community need, and BC Housing is very open to exploring that. We don't have any answers on what it's going to look like yet. We are hoping the public engagement part of this will help us identify if there's, you know, some existing buildings in town that might be a good fit for kind of a longer-term shelter. I do want to also mention, though, that the Alfred Avenue project is more of the long-term solution. So just to be very clear on this, it is a temporary support to support our encampment efforts before the Alfred Avenue project is opened, which is expected for 2027 or 2028, which will be more of the longer term. But we are working with BC Housing to kind of identify what it might look like for that interim solution, whether it's an existing building, whether they can put something down. But that's all very preliminary right now.
Mm-hmm. And do you have an idea of the timeline of where we are now, what we should expect maybe even by this summer?
Yeah, so we are working with BC Housing. We're in discussions right now about what that will look like, but we are hoping there will be some kind of public engagement and consultation either summer or late summer. So it will be this year.
We all saw the homelessness count, and it was 84% identified as Indigenous. So I guess, is there an approach that you're using to make sure that service providers are culturally appropriate supports for this temporary build?
Yes, absolutely. So we will be working with a lot of our own local community providers who are already doing this work, and we're just hoping that it'll be able to provide a bit more care. It'll definitely be local supports, people who know what goes on in our community, people who work with these people already, and making sure that they're culturally sensitive to the experiences that these people may have lived.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
CSK News is funded by the Government of Canada, the Community Radio Fund of Canada, and is a participating station in the Local Journalism Initiative. On behalf of my colleague Dan Messick and myself, Pam Hassan, thanks for listening.